calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Our quote for the day from Albert Einstein: all of us who are concerned for peace and triumph of reason and justice must be keenly aware how small an influence reason and honest good will exert upon influence, upon events in the political field. Coming up on today's program, by the way, the latest in progressive framing with Jeffrey Feldman, and conservative framing as well. And Bell Nirtist is going to be here to discuss if religion is the real root of terrorism. And it should be an interesting conversation. Right now, what's the deal here? The Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, this group that was originally funded by one of the Walton heirs, and many would suggest took down John Kerry, have reincorporated a group where they're going into John Murtha's congressional district and they're going after him. Veterans for Truth, I think they're calling themselves. This is Jack Murtha on Face the Nation.
Let me tell you, the only people who want us in Iraq is Iran and Al-Qaeda. And I talked to a top-level commander the other day, it was about 2 weeks ago, and he said China wants us there also. Why? Because we're depleting our resources, our troop resources, and our fiscal resources.
This from a 37-year veteran of the Marine Corps, colonel in the Marine Corps, a major supporter of our military in the House of Representatives for decades, Jack Murtha. David Tebow is with us. He's the editor-in-chief of the conservative Cybercast News Service, cnsnews.com, their website. And David, over at your website there, you've got... Well, first of all, David, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Forgive my bad manners. Over at the website there, you have an article titled Murtha, U.S. Staying in Iraq Helps Potential Enemies, which is essentially, you know, is about the clip that you just heard by Randy Hall. And I'm wondering, what have you guys been smoking to have a problem with this?
Well, we get our information right, which I can't say the same for you, because you confused the situation right at the top. There are different groups, Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, which pursued John Kerry, and Veterans for Truth, which is pursuing Jack Murtha.
Yeah, I said they're different groups. They've reincorporated, but it's a lot of the same people.
No, it's not the same group. And you made it clear that it was the same group, and it's not. Don't you think that there might be some different reasons for opposing John Murtha and all of the rubbish that he's been saying?
Well, what are your reasons for opposing John Murtha?
I don't personally have any reasons for opposing John Murtha, but I know that there are a lot of veterans out there who do, including 26-year-old Frank Wooderich, who has filed a defamation lawsuit against Murtha because of what Murtha said regarding the killings in Haditha, where he said that the Marines, fellow Marines, let me add, had killed innocent civilians. And Wooderich has filed a defamation lawsuit now against Murtha.
Well, let's get back to the larger issue here.
It's part of the larger issue, Tom.
Sure.
Marines, not just, you know, people who are civilians, but Marines have the biggest problem with Murtha. When he was campaigning with Jim Moran in Northern Virginia, a fellow congressman, another sergeant from the military showed up and dressed them both down and excoriated Murtha for trying to ruin the morale of the U.S. forces in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, it's one voice. I mean, the fact of the matter is, though, that if you look at the surveys and studies that have been done of the actual surveys, you know, where Zogby went in there and did a survey of U.S. soldiers, 72% of them want to pull out now.
Ask yourself who did that survey. Do you know who James Zogby is?
John Zogby.
James Zogby is his brother.
Right. He's the head of the Arab American Institute. Yeah.
You'd think that might have something to do with it?
No, I don't. John Zogby, Zogby International is a large corporation that does polling all over the world. You know, James Zogby's got nothing to do with it.
Right.
And no, I don't think that pollsters have... I think that a pollster with a political agenda will survive one day and that's it.
Well, Tom, other surveys have indicated the reverse of the results you just cited.
For example...
I don't have a poll right in front of me, but I mean I've been seeing information related to the people who are in Iraq, who are in Afghanistan, who are asked whether they believe the mission is worthwhile, And overwhelmingly, they have said yes.
Oh, by the way, I'm looking at the news story here in the Tribune Democrat. This is in Jack Murtha's home district, where this new Veterans for Truth group that
right.
you said has absolutely nothing to do with the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. The I'm reading the news story. This is not some left-wing website, right? This is the news story from the local paper. Their main speaker at the October rally is expected to be one of the founders of the group, John O'Neill, a former Navy officer who served during the Vietnam War. O'Neill was part of the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, a group that was an active campaigner against Senator John Kerry during his failed 2004 presidential bid.
He's speaking at the event.
Yeah, and apparently participating in it as well.
He's not part of the organizing structure of this new group, Veterans for Truth. It's a fellow by the name of Mr. Bailey.
Yeah, I'm sure that they're doing a very, very fine job of...
They're going to chase Murtha down, Tom, for the same reasons that the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth chased down John Kerry, because they consider the comments that he's made to be over the line and unpatriotic.
That's their right in America
to criticize Murtha after Murtha has criticized the administration.
You know, David Tebow, I agree it is the right of anybody in America to lie and to attack politicians. I just find it despicable, and I'm surprised that you don't.
Well, I find it despicable that Murtha has lied and defamed politicians, and not only defamed politicians, but defamed Marines like Frank Wooderich.
At this very moment, David, as you and I are talking, there are people dying, Americans dying in Iraq for a war that we got lied into. How can, you know,
every time you go out on your doorstep, you should be grateful that those terrorists aren't right in front of your doorstep.
Those terrorists in Iraq, you're talking about the Iraqis who don't want us occupying their country?
I'm talking about the terrorists who all galvanized in Iraq because U.S. forces were in Iraq. And let me tell you...
So you're telling me, David, you're telling me, David Tebow...
9/11 because we have, not me personally, the troops have diverted all of the attention of the terrorists to Iraq and Afghanistan. That's why we haven't been hit by 9/11. That's why when you go out to get your newspaper every day, you can be safe and confident that the troops in Iraq are protecting you.
David, do you, I mean, let's just be candid.
Yes, I do believe that.
I just set up aside the hyperbole here for a second.
I
understand that. What I think I just heard you say, in my words, not your words, is that, number one, there are so few terrorists that they're all tied up in Iraq and they're busy right now. And number two, that they're so stupid that they can't essentially walk and chew gum at the same time. They can fight us in Iraq, but they're not smart enough to say, hey, Ahmed, why don't you go over and blow up something in the United States?
Well, you probably think that some guy walking and chewing gum at the same time did 9/11. But let me tell you,
I'm just curious, did the two points that I just made that I think I heard you say, is that really what you said? And if so, do you really think the American people are dumb enough to believe that? It's fine if you are.
Sure. Let me attack those both. The first question, do I believe it? Yes. It takes a tremendous amount of material, manpower, and money to conduct an operation like 9/11.
It took 19 guys with box cutters and $100,000 from the Pakistani Secret Service.
What was spent in terms of conducting 9/11 was a worldwide global funding effort. And the fact that they have diverted all of their money and material...
Hey, you think the box cutters cost a fortune?
Let me finish. To Iraq means that they haven't diverted that attention here. To your second question...
So you're saying there's very few of them.
I'm not saying there are very few of them. I'm saying that they have diverted their attention to the American soldiers in Iraq.
So, and according to the Pentagon, about somewhere between 3% and 5% of the folks who are attacking us in Iraq are non-Iraqis. That is, they're the people that you would call the terrorists. And so, you know, it's got to be what, just a few thousand people, like it was when Bin Laden was around. He had 20,000 graduates of his training camp, but the CIA was estimating he had a hardcore following of about 5,000.
There were 19 people who caused more than, just short of 3,000 deaths on 9/11, Tom.
Yeah, my point. They did it with $3 box cutters.
They did it with a lot of planning and a lot of money.
Right, and you're saying that because those guys are so obsessed with Iraq now, they're not thinking about us anymore.
They're obsessed with killing you and me. That's what they're obsessed with.
But no, you just said they're obsessed with killing the troops in Iraq.
And if it wasn't for the troops in Iraq, they'd be targeting you and me.
Why?
Because they hate everything that we
say. No. Not why would they, you know, I would say that they hate our foreign policy, but that's a whole other argument.
No, they hate the way you and I live, Tom. When are you going to understand this?
No, I get it. You know, the right-wing religious zealots, I agree with you, hate the way we live. I'm just amazed that you would think that, well.
I'm amazed at the way you think.
David, you want to stick around for a minute and try and finish this conversation?
Sure.
Okay, stick around through this break, because I feel like this is just kind of half done here. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman program.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 21 minutes past the hour. We're talking with David Tebow. He's the editor-in-chief at the conservative Cybercast News Service, CNSnews.com. And, David...
I prefer Nancy Sinatra's version, by the way.
Yeah, me too, frankly. I kept waiting to hear if there was... It's the first time I've heard that bumper to see if it was going to go someplace, but finally gave up. I just want to preface all my comments by saying, number one, I have a lot of respect for you. One of the reasons I have you on this program regularly is you're a smart guy. You and I are both parents. I think we share a lot of the same values. We both love this country. We're both patriotic Americans. We both respect the political process. I think probably ultimately if we were to sit down and hash it out, we'd find out we have more in common than we have in opposition, although the opposition is the stuff we highlight on the program.
We're both Americans.
We're both Americans and patriotic Americans, I believe. And I've spent the last couple of weeks in the evenings when I'm having a hard time getting to sleep reading the, because it's incredibly boring, reading the speeches and the writings of Osama bin Laden, in part because I think it's important to understand what your enemy's all about. And you know, bin Laden, in 1997, when he declared a fatwa against the United States, there were two reasons, he said, why he wanted to attack the United States. The third reason he didn't say, which is that he wanted, you know, glory. He wants to be the next Saladin. He thinks he's the reincarnation of Saladin. But the main two reasons, he said, were number one, because in 1991 during the Gulf War, we put American soldiers on and defiled on the holy soil of Islam in Saudi Arabia. And men were watching pornography and drinking alcohol. Women were driving cars and walking around with their elbows showing. And that was desecration of the Holy Land. And number two, that he felt that the price of oil, which at that time was $18 a barrel, was so low that essentially we were stealing the natural resources of the Holy Land, and the price of oil should be at least $60 or $70 a barrel. Well, now the price of oil is $70 a barrel since George Bush became president, and last year Bush pulled all of our troops out of Saudi Arabia. So Osama bin Laden has gotten both things that he asked for, plus he's still a free guy.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, we've got the entire Arab world now upset with us because of our occupation of Iraq. And it sounds to me like what you're saying is that anybody who wants to go after us, whether it's because of our support of Israel, whether it's, and by the way, I speak as a supporter of Israel, whether it's because of our foreign policies, some of which I support, some of which I don't, you know, we can argue that some other day, whether it's because they hold to religious fundamentalism and think that, you know, women should not have equal rights like, you know, one of our goals here in the United States, those kinds of things. That all those terrorists around the world, potential enemies of the United States, people who might want to attack us, that all of them have just suddenly either gone into hibernation or gotten just stoned out in fascination with Iraq or shown up in Iraq, and that's why we haven't been attacking the United States, because we attacked Iraq. That's what I'm getting from what you're saying. And
yeah.
I don't believe that, and I'm astounded that you do, if you really do.
I do. in addition to the fact that after 9/11, we finally cracked down on terrorism, unlike the years of the Clinton administration when he wanted to deal exclusively with the economy and didn't want to bother with terrorism. We have instituted a bunch of precautionary measures. We've got a lot more people looking for bad guys in this country, and that combined with the fact that we took the fight to them instead of waiting for them to take it to us again after 9/11 means that, yes, you and I and our fellow Americans here in the continental United States have not been hit again since 9/11.
Well, you could see, I mean, you could have said that before that, too. I mean, come on, David. This is jingoism. First of all, Clinton was aggressively trying to get bin Laden. Clinton was aggressively trying to get bin Laden. And every time he did, when he threw the missiles at him, he had Republicans on the floor of the House going, oh, he's trying to wag the Monica tail.
That's ridiculous, and you know it.
You remember
it. Clinton didn't lift a finger to try to get Osama bin Laden or any of the terrorists.
He tried to assassinate him twice. One time, the second time he tried, he was with restrained at the last minute because bin Laden was sitting there with members of the Dubai royal
Bill
family.
Bill Clinton wanted to succeed, didn't have the courage of any conviction, much less good convictions, didn't want to do.
And Dick Cheney was made head of the counterterrorism task force, which didn't even meet until September of 2001.
He knew that if he focused on the economy, that would be success for him. He didn't care about terrorism or international or defense policy, and that's why it led to 9/11.
David, you can't believe that.
I do believe that.
This is a guy who was trying to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian problem, who had a program specifically against bin Laden.
Came to the table with good faith. Do you actually believe that?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of your sentence.
Do you believe that Arafat went to the table with good faith?
No, I don't.
Because Clinton believed.
No, I don't think Clinton believed that either.
Another matter, Tom.
He's enough
of a pragmatist. You say you support Israel. You support Israel after they were attacked by Hezbollah, and Israel is taking the offensive. Why can't you support the United States after 9/11?
I believe I am supporting the United States, David.
You're contradictory.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it at that. It's always an interesting conversation with you, David. CNSNews.com, the website. David Tebow, the editor-in-chief there. Dave, thanks for being with us today.
Have a good day.
You too. 27 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 21 minutes past the hour. We're talking with David Tebow. He's the editor-in-chief at the conservative Cybercast News Service, CNSNews.com. And, David...
I prefer Nancy Sinatra's version, by the way.
Yeah, me too, frankly. I kept waiting to hear if there was... It's the first time I've heard that bumper to see if it was going to go someplace, but finally gave up. I just want to preface all my comments by saying, number one, I have a lot of respect for you. One of the reasons I have you on this program regularly is you're a smart guy. You and I are both parents. I think we share a lot of the same values. We both love this country. We're both patriotic Americans. We both respect the political process. I think probably ultimately if we were to sit down and hash it out, we'd find out we have more in common than we have in opposition, although the opposition is the stuff we highlight on the program.
We're both Americans.
We're both Americans and patriotic Americans, I believe. And I've spent the last couple of weeks in the evenings when I'm having a hard time getting to sleep reading because it's incredibly boring, reading the speeches and the writings of Osama bin Laden, in part because I think it's important to understand what your enemy's all about. And you know, bin Laden, in 1997, when he declared a fatwa against the United States, there were two reasons, he said, why he wanted to attack the United States. The third reason he didn't say, which is that he wanted, you know, glory. He wants to be the next Saladin. He thinks he's the reincarnation of Saladin. But the main two reasons, he said, were number one, because in 1991 during the Gulf War, we put American soldiers on and defiled on the holy soil of Islam in Saudi Arabia. And men were watching pornography and drinking alcohol. Women were driving cars and walking around with their elbows showing. And that was a desecration of the Holy Land. And number two, that he felt that the price of oil, which at that time was $18 a barrel, was so low that essentially we were stealing the natural resources of the Holy Land, and the price of oil should be at least $60 or $70 a barrel. Well, now the price of oil is $70 a barrel since George Bush became president, and last year Bush pulled all of our troops out of Saudi Arabia. So Osama bin Laden has gotten both things that he asked for, plus he's still a free guy.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, we've got the entire Arab world now upset with us because of our occupation of Iraq. And it sounds to me like what you're saying is that anybody who wants to go after us, whether it's because of our support of Israel, whether it's, and by the way, I speak as a supporter of Israel, whether it's because of our foreign policies, some of which I support, some of which I don't, you know, we can argue that some other day, whether it's because they hold to religious fundamentalism and think that, you know, women should not have equal rights like, you know, one of our goals here in the United States, those kinds of things. That all those terrorists around the world, all or potential terrorists, potential enemies of the United States, people who might want to attack us, that all of them have just suddenly either gone into hibernation or gotten just stoned out in fascination with Iraq or shown up in Iraq, and that's why we haven't been attacking the United States, because we attacked Iraq. That's what I'm getting from what you're saying. And
yeah.
I just don't believe that, and I'm astounded that you do, if you really do.
I do. In addition to the fact that after 9/11, we finally cracked down on terrorism, unlike the years of the Clinton administration when he wanted to deal exclusively with the economy and didn't want to bother with terrorism. We have instituted a bunch of precautionary measures. We've got a lot more people looking for bad guys in this country, and that combined with the fact that we took the fight to them instead of waiting for them to take it to us again after 9/11 means that, yes, you and I and our fellow Americans here in the continental United States have not been hit again since 9/11.
Well, you could see, I mean, you could have said that before that, too. I mean,
come on, David,
this is jingoism.
Gone,
first of all, Clinton was aggressively trying to get bin Laden. And every time he did, when he threw the missiles at him, he had Republicans on the floor of the House going, oh, he's trying to wag the Monica tail.
That's ridiculous, and you know it.
You remember
Bill Clinton didn't lift a finger to try to get Osama bin Laden or any of the terrorists.
He tried to assassinate him twice. One time, the second time he tried, he was restrained at the last minute because bin Laden was sitting there with members of the Dubai royal family.
Bill Clinton wanted to succeed, didn't have the courage of any conviction, much less good convictions, didn't want to do things.
And Dick Cheney was made head of the counterterrorism task force, which didn't even meet until September of 2001.
He knew that if he focused on the economy, that would be success for him. He didn't care about terrorism or international or defense policy, and that's why it led to 9/11.
David, you can't believe that.
I do believe
that. This is a guy who was trying to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian problem, who had a program specifically against bin Laden.
He came to the table with good faith. Do you actually believe that?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of your sentence.
That Arafat went to the table with good faith?
No, I don't.
Because Clinton believed.
No, I don't think Clinton believed that either.
Another matter, Tom.
He's enough.
Say you support Israel. You support Israel after they were attacked by Hezbollah, and Israel is taking the offensive. Why can't you support the United States after 9/11?
I believe I am supporting the United States, David.
You're contradictory.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it at that. It's always an interesting conversation with you, David. CNSNews.com, the website. David Tebow, the editor-in-chief there. Dave, thanks for being with us today.
Have a good day.
You too. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I know a place. Ain't nobody crying. Ain't nobody worried. Ain't no smiling faces.
And welcome back. 50 minutes after the hour, coming up on 9 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. over the weekend, I did on Friday, I did my program live from WTKG in Grand Rapids, our affiliate there, and I spent the weekend with family. And one of my brother Steve, and his partner on Saturday wanted to go out to a shooting range. His partner was thinking of buying a new pistol. And so Louise and I went out to the shooting range. And David Poole, my producer, is here with me. David, let me hand you these two NRA, official NRA targets there, both full of bullet holes. What do you see as the difference between those two?
Well, the one with the big holes has no bullseye, and the one with the little one has quite a few, actually.
Yeah, well, the one with the little holes was Louise shooting the .22 pistol, and the one with the big holes was me shooting the 9mm semi-automatic, and I didn't get any bullseye. So here I'm officially... My wife is a better shot than I am.
She's a much better shot. Much better shot.
My masculinity has been challenged, right? Oh, my. You know, it's
it was her first time, too.
Yeah, it was Louise's first time, yeah. First time she'd ever handled a gun in her life. So, anyway, as the 50-foot NRA targets. Back to the topic. 1-866-440-8... Thank you, David. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. And let's see here, Paula in Carbondale, Illinois. Hey, Paula, what's up?
Hi. Well, originally I called when you had your guest on.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble with having these guys on, and I really have no problem with you doing that, is that you have to make certain assumptions to get to talk to them. And originally I called because I was upset that you both had to pretend like 19 Arabs directed by a guy on dialysis in a cave could bring down the whole American government. But then you started talking about terrorists and how the United States should be against them. And you know that America actually supports terrorists. They had, it just depends on the terrorists. For instance, Miami had Orlando Bosch Day. We had terrorists from Haiti openly living in New York. Multiple terrorists against Cuba. Living in Miami, and we had that guy that blew up the Venezuelan airplane that, I forget his name, Carlos something, that they refused to extradite, although he's a convicted terrorist. So it's, and don't forget...
Oh, it's because Venezuela wanted him.
Yeah, we set up Al-Qaeda to start out with. That's why the Arabs were here, because they were given passports to come here because they were fighting the Russians in Afghanistan. We also set up the Nicaraguan Contras to terrorize the people of Nicaragua. So really, we shouldn't pretend the United States is against terrorists.
Yeah, okay. Paula, I'll give you that. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Good, good one. 1-866-440-8466. Philip in Sacramento, California. And Paula, thanks for listening to WINI. Philip is listening on KSAC. Hey, Philip, what's up in Sacramento?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good. What's up?
Hey, if I'm not mistaken, David from CSN made a comment that, we're preoccupying the terrorists over in Iraq, and that's why we haven't been hit again.
Yeah, he made that point several times. I kept saying, I can't believe an intelligent person is saying this, but apparently some intelligent people believe it.
Well, you know, the thing is, the terrorists that got us on 9/11 didn't get off a plane one day, wake up, and then go hijack four others. They were here for years.
Yeah, assuming that the official story is true, yeah.
Yeah, the ones that are going to try it again are already among us, unfortunately.
In all probability, if they are, another possibility is the one that some counterterrorism experts put forward, which is that people who would engage in terrorist acts against the United States, including Bin Laden and his merry band, at least pre-invasion of Iraq, was a very small number of people. There's really a very small number of people who would do that. And what we've done by invading Iraq and inflaming the Arab world is we've increased that number. But, have we increased it from, 50 or 100 people to 500 or 1,000 people? Or have we increased it from 1,000 people to 20,000? I mean, I don't have any idea, but I don't buy the argument that the United States is safer as a consequence of Bush's invasion of Iraq. I just don't buy it.
No.
I appreciate your call, Philip. Thank you very much, and thanks for listening
there.
Sure enough, Frank. Frank in Westchester, Illinois. You want to disagree with me, Frank? What's up?
Well, I just want you to explain something to me, because I can't figure it out. I mean, if we have not been hit once in 5 years since 9/11, and George Bush gets absolutely no credit for that, and the war on terror is not working, what do they just choose not to hit us anymore? Are they done?
Frank,
what explanation can you give me for not being hit in 5 years?
Frank, the fact that you have not been hit by lightning in your life, is that proof that you're immune to lightning?
Well, it seems like you got your bases covered. If we do not get hit, you don't give them any.
No, I'm serious. The fact that you haven't been killed in a car accident, does that mean that you're immune to car accidents?
No, not at all.
Okay, well, I'd say the fact that we haven't been hit is either, you know, dumb luck. Certainly Bush has done some good things, but, you know, what, 5% of the stuff coming through our ports is being checked right now? I mean, come on. The 9/11 Commission gave the guy a D. The war in Iraq, you know, stirring up the Muslim world against us. You really think Bush is making us the world and the United States safer? I just don't buy it, Frank.
It just sounds like you have your bases covered. If we don't get hit as a talk show host and somebody in your position, you can give him no credit. And if your lucky day happens and we do get hit and thousands of people are killed,
that would not be my lucky day, Frank. That would be a horrible, horrible thing. But the fact of the matter is that 100,000 people have died in Iraq who didn't have to die in Iraq, and that is pissing off a whole lot of people around the world who are looking at us as the bad guys. And I just really don't think the United States should be looked at as the bad guys. That's not the country that I love.
Now these terrorists have multiplied, and you're saying none of them have chosen to do anything on our turf?
Well, not so far, but wouldn't surprise me if they did next week. And as I said, that would be a terrible, terrible thing. I hope and pray it doesn't happen. Frank, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. We've got to wrap it up here. 56 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Coming up next, Jeffrey Feldman's going to talk with us. He's the editor-in-chief of Frame Shop is Open about the con and progressive frames that are out there. And then a talk radio news service. And then we're going to get into this new piece of legislation that the Bushies are pushing that could turn the United States into just a total fascist state. It's mind-boggling. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, exposing the con and conservative 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, right here. And pleased to be with you. Jeffrey Feldman is with us. He's the editor-in-chief at FrameShopIsOpen.com. Jeffrey, one of America's great framing experts. Hey, Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom.
Glad to have you with us. One of your top story here, posted July 31st, FrameShop, Republicans, lights out, lights on.
Yeah, we've got another season of blackouts.
Yeah, and well, actually, you have the powers in the frame, actually, above that one, too. So I suspect they're tied together.
Yeah, a couple of posts that I've been working on over the past couple of days in response to this crazy situation that we find ourselves in once again with Republicans in charge of this country. We've all become used to the idea that the temperature goes above 85 degrees and blackouts are the norm. And so listening to the radio here in New York in particular, we're basically just waiting for the lights to go out. There's warnings on the television telling us all to conserve energy. And the electrical companies in particular are saying, look, if you want the blackouts not to happen, then you need to...
Give us more money.
You need to give us more money. They've got a lot of money. You need to dial up on your thermostat. You need to not run the dishwasher in the evening. Basically, they're saying through press releases on their websites that the problem with the blackouts is being caused by the consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went to one particular website, a company called National Grid, which operates, it's actually a London-based company, which operates a bunch of electrical services in the upstate New York area and around here. And while they're telling everybody to conserve energy, they are also going out and using their profits to buy more electrical companies. So rather than investing their profits in a system that actually works, when the temperature goes above a certain number, they're taking all that money and rolling it over into an ever-expanding corporation with more profit for their shareholders.
Well, and the fact is that scarcity increases prices. So if they can make electricity a little more scarce, they can then justify price increases by saying, you know, it's scarce, so we have to raise the price. You know, it seems like a, a win-win for the electric companies.
It's a win-win for them, and I think that one thing that progressives should do at this particular time is they should remember that one of the basic ideas of progressive political philosophy in this country is that the purpose of government is to protect people from being exploited in precisely these situations. I don't remember that we had rolling blackouts 6 years ago before the Republicans took over all three branches of government. And so now is the time when it is hot outside and people are thinking about this for Democratic leaders to stand up and say, look, if you want the situation to change, it's not enough just to conserve, although we do need to be careful about the amount of waste of electricity that we have in our daily lives, but get the Republicans out and we should be able to get the lights back on. It's a really basic point.
I think there's a larger point here, too, Jeffrey Feldman. Frameshopisopen.com, and that is the one of deregulation. Before Reagan began deregulating the power industries, and it's picked up over time, but, you know, by and large, the rules got changed, largely because of the lobbying of Ken Lay. The rules got changed, and when the electrical utilities got deregulated, then we had the blackouts. In fact, if you look at California, where you had all these big, you know, Enron-caused blackouts, the only communities in California that were completely unaffected were the ones that were municipally owned, were locally owned. And I think that this is a great opportunity for raising the whole meme of the commons, of, you know, electricity is something that, because it's a natural monopoly, you're not going to have five different power companies run wires into your house. Because it's a natural monopoly, and because it's essential to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it is a fundamental thing that survival depends on. And the way it's generated has to do with national security. In other words, are we going to get our electricity from solar power, or are we going to get our electricity from Saudi Arabia, you know, via oil? All of these are things that argue for electricity, in particular, you know, power being in the hands of the people, of local governments, of decentralizing these things, breaking up these giant monopolies, and the opposite of privatization, you know, bringing them back as public utilities.
Yeah, that's a great point. And one of the ideas that's holding these monopolies in place is the Republican idea of the free market. Of course, in the area of utilities and electricity, free market doesn't mean that consumers are free to do anything that they want to.
Right. There's nothing free about the electric marketplace.
Absolutely not. It simply means that these large companies are free to act in predatorial ways, ways that drive prices up, that introduce scarcity when you actually need more flow into the grid, and in ways that involve not investing in things like cable and things like basic structures that allow our system to be much more flexible when the temperature goes up. Listening to these electrical companies, you would think that it's the responsibility of the American people to not reproduce as quickly, to not want to be as comfortable in the summer. It's really crazy. And because of the heat, because of people's exhaustion and their concern over the livelihood of their families, of, you know, old people suffering from heat prostration, grocery stores losing their entire inventory, people are not really thinking about the source causes of what's going on here, and they're accepting these arguments coming out of both government and the corporations.
Yeah. Marianne Williamson, about 5-6 years ago, put together an anthology where she got a whole bunch of people to write about what America could be like 50 years from now. It's called Imagine. Imagine America in 50 years if everything was done right. And I wrote a piece for it in which I was talking about power and how if we did everything right 50 years from now, every community at the level of the block or the neighborhood would produce their own energy. I mean, you know, 15-20% of our electricity is lost just in transmission line losses right now. And we have the means, you know, the whole variety of different ways that we should be doing this. I think it's just, you know, there's a couple of opportunities here to talk about re-regulation and to talk about the importance of local power. I'd like to move along, though. You also, we're talking with Jeffrey Feldman. He's the editor-in-chief at frameshopisopen.com, one of America's leading experts on framing. And you are talking about the frames involved in the Lamont-Lieberman race. This is fascinating.
It is totally fascinating. Right now, the Netroots are literally alive and engaged in the battle to unseat Joe Lieberman in the Democratic primary in Connecticut, which is August 8th, next week. And you've got Ned Lamont, who is charismatic and very outspoken progressive candidate. And it's been remarkable how he's been able to start from nothing, really no reputation in politics whatsoever, and mount a challenge. He now has a lead. I'm not quite sure what the numbers are as of today, but he has a lead in that race. And what I write about in a piece called Lamont and the Kiss is the central place that this image of President Bush kissing Joe Lieberman on the cheek several years ago, I believe it was during State of the Union address. Or
Yeah, it was. It was right after State of the Union address.
Activists on the ground in Connecticut have reproduced or have produced a large float that they drive around on the back of a truck, large papier-mâché heads of President Bush and Joe Lieberman, the likenesses of them, that they call the Kiss. And they drive this to just about every single rally that they can get it to. And the basic idea is that while the press is talking about the importance of Lamont's Iraq position, he really is supporting the positions of Murtha, the idea that the troops need to pull back to a certain point and need to pass over responsibility to the Iraqis. But I'm arguing that it's actually this image of Lieberman kissing the president that's having a huge impact at framing what's going on the ground in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Now, the flip side of this is the Lieberman forces are trying to frame the entire Lieberman-Lamont thing as being about the Iraq war, when in fact Lamont is a progressive in a whole range of areas, that many of which I think ultimately for the long-term health of the United States are even more important than the Iraq war, or at least equally, things like international trade policy, domestic policies that have to do with minimum wage, labor, things like that. Lamont is far more progressive than Joe Lieberman.
Far more progressive. And one of the things that this particular image of the Kiss is doing is it's allowing people to crystallize all those progressive ideas and see that Joe Lieberman stands really for the opposite of those things.
Mm-hmm.
That he stands for this collusion between the ruling power and senior members of the Senate, when people really are demanding much more that we have democratic representatives that listen to the voice of the people, that speak with honesty, and that really believe in a core set of progressive ideas.
Yeah. Finally, we have about 30 seconds. We're talking with Jeffrey Feldman. Frameshop is open.com, the website. News speak on John Bolton.
Yeah, John Bolton, if anybody had the displeasure of listening to John Bolton speak in front of the Senate, one thing you noticed was that when he was explaining what was going on in the Security Council vis-a-vis attempting to get a ceasefire in the Middle East, he was using a variety of terms that reminded me of this Orwellian idea of newspeak, saying the exact opposite of what you mean. In particular, there's a bunch of phrases, defanging Hezbollah, root causes of violence, and care and use of force, and I discussed those in that particular article.
And you can read all about it over at frameshopisopen.com. Jeffrey Feldman. Jeffrey, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Great talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And I won't.
Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. Tom Hartman with you, 21 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to our program. Victoria Jones, our senior final briefing White House correspondent, on the line with us with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Hey, Victoria.
Well, hey, Tom. Yes, indeed. Today is the final briefing in the Brady Press briefing room as we know it. I believe that 6 press secretaries are going to be there for this briefing. I think Fitzwater's going to be there. Joe Lockhart's going to be there. I think Dee Dee Myers. I'm not sure who the others are. And, of course, Tony Snow.
So it's going to be more of a, of a feel-good event than a really serious news course.
Well, I'm sure that there will be some fairly serious questions asked because there are some quite serious issues out there. So I don't know whether all the press secretaries will be up there all the time. There's no way, given the events that are going on in the world, that Tony Snow can avoid the issues, I don't think.
Yeah. So, Victoria, for our listeners who may not know exactly what you're talking about, the White House Press Briefing Room,
that's
the official name of it, up till this point, basically, it's been a big room, and in the front there's like a curtain or a wall with the White House logo and a podium, and people stand behind the podium and talk. And my understanding is that they're going to replace that wall behind the podium with a huge multimedia screen, an electronic screen, so that they can do, like, you know, all the, when the president speaks, they can run video, they can cover the wall with logos, you know, fighting the war against terror, keeping America safe, you know, stuff like that, over and over and over again. So no matter what, how the camera shot is, they get their little message in subliminally, that kind of thing. Is that what's going on?
That was less clear this morning than it had been heretofore, because Tony Snow was asked about that and exactly what was going to be there, and he said that it hadn't been decided yet, and he didn't know what the budget was going to be. He said it, at the very least it's going to be what it is now, and maybe there will be money for a couple of TV screens, but he did not know, and he certainly didn't anticipate at this point that there was going to be anything of that kind of dimension.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. That conflicts with the stories that I've been hearing
bubbling
under the surface.
No, it could be that, you know, they may have some larger plan, or it could be that the budget is... He was asked what the budget was, and he said he didn't know, but that they were going to stay within the budget.
Or is it possible that they're just going to stop inviting people like you, accredited White House correspondents, into the White House, and they're going to start holding these things across the street?
Well, that is something that was asked very specifically, and initially he said that, yes, they will be back, and then he said, yes, you will be back, and it will be better than ever. That is a direct quote. So we will be back.
Yeah.
So I actually now have no doubts. And he added, you know, that he looks forward to us being back because he said he does not wish to schlep through bad weather twice a day to briefings up the street to where we're going to be.
Ah, okay. Well, that's good news. That's changed since we first spoke this morning.
Yes, it has. I'm more optimistic than I was at that time.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. And now, with regard to legislation and, you know, what's going on Capitol Hill, what do you see the rest of this week bringing? What's going on right now?
Very little. I mean, we've got this Alberto Gonzalez hearing going on. We've got Peter Pace, the Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman, testifying tomorrow, interestingly, about Iraq, Afghanistan, and the global war on terror. That should be quite a platform for everybody. I think that will be extremely interesting. But obviously no legislation is going to come out of it. I think almost nothing's going to come out now. I mean, Snow was asked today about the John Bolton nomination and whether he was worried about the delay in the vote for his confirmation. And, you know, they knew it would happen, Snow said, because of the Senate's recess. I don't think anybody expects anything really meaningful to happen now before September. There just simply isn't time. Having said that, they could do some midnight things. But
yeah.
I think most people, you know, really do think things are grinding down.
It was last year that Pat Roberts, the Republican chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, said that he was going to release part two of the investigation into what went wrong with 9/11 and the government's response and all that, you know, the whole nine yards. The part two being the part that dealt with political, the invasion of Iraq. Part two being the part that might deal with political manipulation of intelligence. He's still refusing to release that. Is anybody holding him or the White House to account on that?
Not directly. I mean, there have been a few articles coming out about this just recently, and I think the pressure is starting to build, not only on Roberts, but also on the Democrats. And Rockefeller, in particular, who the ranking member on that committee, is really remarkably ticked off. He's come under a lot of flack for basically rolling over and going along with Roberts, and he really hasn't.
No, he's been pushing for it.
Yeah, he's been pushing for this.
Now, Roberts, the last time he was on Meet the Press, and he kind of abruptly pulled a prescription bottle out of his pocket and put it on the table and said, these are memory pills. Does he have Alzheimer's? I mean, there's only one kind of memory pill out there, and it's for Alzheimer's.
I don't know.
It's keep your ear to the ground on that one, would you? I'm curious if he's taking medication for Alzheimer's and he's the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. That's
the kind of thing we might want to know.
There's a disconnect there, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service. Always great talking with you, Victoria.
Thank you.
TalkRadioNews.com. Thank you very much. It's 27 minutes past the hour. The pill that will help you escape the matrix, the Tom Hartman radio program. We'll be right back.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Well, the midnight headlight, find you on a rainy night, steep bed, up ahead, slowing down, making no time. But I gotta keep rolling. Close the windshield wipers, slapping out a tempo, keeping perfect rhythm with the song on the radio. But I gotta keep rolling.
Yes, indeed, in the better way. Get out there and get active politically. Republicans, take back the Republican Party. Republicans of good conscience and decent people. Democrats, get active in the Democratic Party. Progressives, help take back the Democratic Party. Greens, get out there and get right across the board. We all need to be getting active, getting out there and getting active. Today, August 2nd, 1934, was the day that German President Paul von Hindenburg died and Chancellor Adolf Hitler became the absolute dictator of Germany under the title of Führer, or leader. He assured his people that the Third Reich would last for 1,000 years. It was going to be the beginning of 1,000 years of peace. The biblically described 1,000 years of peace, you know, the same stuff that George W. Bush is into of, you know, if there's only a war in the Middle East, war will bring about peace. Of course, Hitler's Reich only lasted 11 years, but nonetheless, he thought it would do a little better than that. Now, the reason that I think that that anniversary is of particular consequence, particular importance, is that the main way that Hitler achieved power, held power, and made his country insane, and there's really no other way to describe it, it was insanity. I mean, people were followers of a cult, a personality cult of Hitler, was by essentially setting aside the rule of law. The passage of the enabling laws shortly after the Reichstaggebäude was burned, the parliament building was burned by Marius van der Lubbe, this 28-year-old, as I recall, Dutch. Some suggest he was mentally ill. I mean, who knows? Dutch communist. And, you know, there's still debate about whether or not he had help from Hitler's guys, the brown shirts. Probably did. But there was a book published in Germany this year in German suggesting that he actually did act alone. He had tried to set several buildings on fire in the weeks prior to his successful attempt on the parliament, and they had been unsuccessful. But it was a tool that Hitler used brilliantly to say, that, you know, there are enemies among us, and so we have to change the law. And he passed the enabling laws, and he got this through parliament, that said that the rule of law in Germany that had been set up after the end of World War I, the rule of law, the democracy in Germany, would be modified so that the government could tap telephones if they thought it had to do with terrorism. The terrorist, specifically Marius van der Lubbe, the guy who burned down the Reichstag. He, by the way, he was arrested along with 7 or 8, I forget, co-conspirators. And van der Lubbe was executed. But in any case, the enabling laws that were passed by Hitler, number one, said that you didn't have the right to a trial. You didn't have the right to face your accuser, number two. You didn't, you know, the government could use hearsay against you. They could tap your telephones if they needed to without going through a court, without getting a court order. They could open your mail without a court order. And you could be held without charges if you were suspected of terrorism, without bail. And these laws so concerned the parliament, the German parliament, that they put a four-year sunset provision on them. That if the state of emergency that had come about in Germany as a consequence of that terrorist attack of the parliament building, the equivalent of our Capitol building being burned down by this Dutch terrorist, if that state of emergency passed, then these laws would expire. I mean, the parallels between the enabling laws in Germany and the Patriot Act in the United States are absolutely spooky to anybody who's actually read and studied both of them. But now the Bush administration wants to take it to the next step. This in today's Washington Post, and I'm amazed that this wasn't, you know, the screaming headline on ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN. It should be everywhere. I only saw it in the Washington Post. It maybe by now the New York Times has picked it up. It wasn't in the morning, this morning's paper, at least that I saw. I didn't see it in the Wall Street Journal. I can't say I read every single story, every single inch, but I was looking for something like this. But in the Washington Post, buried on page 4, an article by Washington Post staff writer R. Jeffrey Smith. A Bush administration plan for special military courts seeks to expand and the reach and authority of such commissions, in quotes. Okay, so first of all, they're renaming these things. They're no longer courts. They're commissions. To include trials, for the first time, of people who are not members of Al-Qaeda or the Taliban and are not directly involved in acts of international terrorism, according to officials familiar with the proposal. Do you get this? The Bush administration this is a draft plan circulating around Congress right now among the Republicans that would essentially say, we're going to change the rules of the game. Yes, we've had this thing called the Constitution for 230 years, but time to throw that out the window. After all, it's a post-9/11 world. And so we don't need this, you have the right to face your accuser stuff from the Sixth Amendment, the Seventh Amendment, I forget which one, one or the other. We don't need this, you have the right to make bail. We don't need this, you have the right to a speedy trial. We don't need this, you have the right to know what you're charged with. We don't need this stuff. They want to apply the rules of Guantanamo to you and me. If my read of this is correct, and let me share a chunk of the story with you. You can make up your own mind. I just read you the first paragraph. A draft Bush administration for special military courts seeks to expand the reach and authority of such commissions to include trials for the first time of people who are not members of Al-Qaeda or the Taliban and are not directly involved in acts of international terrorism. The plan, which would replace a military trial system ruled illegal by the Supreme Court in June, would also allow the Secretary of Defense to add crimes at will. In other words, Don Rumsfeld can simply make up a law. He can say, for example, it's now illegal to call George W. Bush a doofus. And if you break this particular law, you will be held at one of these commissions, before one of these commissions. Okay. It would allow the Secretary of Defense to add crimes at will to those under the military court's jurisdiction. The two provisions would be likely to put more individuals than previously expected before military juries, officials and independent experts said. The draft proposed legislation, set to be discussed at two Senate hearings today, is controversial inside and outside the administration. And this is straight up. I'm reading this from the Washington Post. is controversial inside and outside the administration because defendants would be denied many protections guaranteed by the civilian and traditional military criminal justice systems. Under the proposed procedures, defendants would lack rights to confront accusers. They would lack the right to exclude hearsay accusations or to bar evidence obtained through rough or coercive interrogations. They would not be guaranteed a public or speedy trial and would lack the right to choose their military counsel, who in turn would not be guaranteed equal access to evidence held by prosecutors. Detainees would also not be guaranteed the right to be present at their own trial if their absence is deemed necessary to protect national security or individuals. Defendants can be tried in absentia. John D. Hudson, the Navy's top, now this, I'm still reading from this piece from today's Washington Post by R. Jeffrey Smith. You should read this. John D. Hudson, the Navy's top uniformed lawyer from 1997 to 2000, said the rules would evidently allow the government to tell a prisoner, quote, "We know you're guilty, we can't tell you why, but there's a guy, we can't tell you who told us something. We can't tell you what, but you're guilty." End quote. This is the Navy's top lawyer for the last 3 years of the Clinton administration. Bruce Fein, an associate deputy attorney general during the Reagan administration, said after reviewing the leaked draft that, quote, "The theme of the government seems to be they are guilty anyway, and therefore due process can be slighted," end quote. With these procedures, Fein said, this is a guy from the Reagan administration. He said, quote, "There is a real danger of getting a wrong verdict that would let lower echelon detainees rot for 30 years at Guantanamo Bay because of evidence contrived by personal enemies." Administration officials have said that the exceptional trial procedures are warranted because the fight against terrorism requires heavy reliance on classified information. They can even prosecute you for hearsay obtained under torture. This is mind-boggling. This is absolutely mind-boggling. Is it the end of democracy in the United States? We'll come back with our activism alert, what you can do about this, right after this, 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
You'd have never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly.
Yes, indeed you did, Karl Rove and George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and all these Wolfowitz, all these chicken hawks who led us into this war where still our young men and women are dying every day. This is just so wrong. Welcome back. 9 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman radio program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting for a Change in America. Hopefully. No, we are changing this country. I know we are changing. You can feel it in the air. People are waking up, and this is our absolutely. This is our activism alert for the day.
May day all we gather, may day long go. They got the guns, but we got the numbers. Gonna win, yeah, we're taking over.
Indeed, we are, well, taking over. Yeah, we're taking over. It's time for Americans to rise up and take back America. And step one, I'd say, is to contact your elected officials. Contact your members, your two senators, and your member of the House of Representatives, your members of Congress, at 1-888-355-3588. 1-888-355-3588. If you send these guys emails now, they've got email filters that usually... Not usually, but many of them ignore emails. If you send a postal mail, be sure you send it to their local office, because if you send it to Washington, D.C., it can take 2 months to get there because everything goes through the anthrax checkers. But you can call toll-free 1-888-355-3588. If you're not sure who your member of Congress, of the House of Representatives is, you can simply give them your zip code and they'll connect you. If you're not, even if you're not sure who the senators are from your state, each one of us has two senators, the two senators for our states, and then you have one member of the House of Representatives. And I would call all three and just say this idea of the Bush administration to expand these military tribunals, and it is wrong. It is anti-American. It is anti-democratic, small d democratic. It is anti-American. It is absolutely wrong. They're expanding Guantanamo Bay now. This is not the direction that we want the United States to go. We need to be smarter, not more authoritarian, not more brutal, smarter. And this is just not it. Meanwhile, this also from the Washington Post today, Dan Eggen's, not column, I mean this is a news story, page 3 of the Washington Post. The headline, 9/11 panels suspect deception by Pentagon. Some staff members and commissioners of the 9/11 panel, the September 11 panel, concluded that the Pentagon's initial story of how it reacted to the 2001 terrorist attacks may have been part of a deliberate effort to mislead the commission and the public rather than a reflection of the fog of events on that day, according to sources involved in the debate. Suspicion of wrongdoing ran so deep that the 10-member commission, in a secret meeting at the end of its tenure in September of 2004, debated referring the matter to the Justice Department for criminal investigation. In the end, the panel agreed to a compromise, turning over the allegations to the Inspectors General for the Defense and Transportation Departments, who can make criminal referrals if they believe they're warranted. Yeah, right. So they said to the Bush administration, here, you guys can inspect yourselves. Thomas Keene, the former Republican governor of New Jersey who led the commission, he said, "We to this day don't know why NORAD, the North American Aerospace Command, told us what they told us. It was just so far from the truth, it's one of those loose ends that never got tied." What? We to this day don't know why NORAD lied to the 9/11 commission? And this from the Republican chairman of the commission, Thomas Keene? I'm telling you, anyone who just, you know, reads the 9/11 report and says, "Oh, yep, that's it, I'm convinced." I was going to make some kind of, you know, wisecrack, like, you know, I want to smoke whatever they're smoking, but I don't think I want to. It's time for us to start paying attention to this stuff and paying attention carefully. They went on to say, although the commission's landmark report made it clear that the Defense Department's early versions of events on the day of the attacks were inaccurate. Inaccurate? The revelation that it considered criminal referrals reveals how skeptically those reports were viewed by the panel and provides a glimpse into the tension between it and the Bush administration. I mean, here we have the Washington Post reporting today that Thomas Keene, the Republican handpicked by George W. Bush, the Republican former governor of New Jersey, handpicked to head up the 9/11 commission. Now we're discovering 2 years later that Thomas Keene is saying, and he's now coming out and saying it on the record to Dan Eggen at the Washington Post, that NORAD lied to them about what happened on 9/11, and we still don't know what happened. Now this, I'm not putting forward any kind of conspiracy theory here. I'm just saying, hey, why don't we know, like, the basics? As Dan Eggen in Washington Post writes, he says, for more than 2 years after the attacks, officials with NORAD and the FAA provided inaccurate information. This isn't like failed to provide information. Provided inaccurate information about the response to the hijackings in testimony and media appearances. In fact, the commission reported a year later, audio tapes from NORAD's Northeast headquarters and other evidence show clearly that the military never had any of the hijacked airliners in its sights. These and other discrepancies did not become clear until the commission, forced to use subpoenas, obtained the audio tapes, the officials said. Former Navy Secretary John Lehman, Republican commission member, said he believed the panel had been lied to. He says, "My view of that was that whether it was willful or just the fog of stupid bureaucracy, I don't know. But in the order of the magnitude of things, going after bureaucrats because they misled the commission didn't make sense to me." Yeah. But this, now Thomas Keene coming out saying, this goes much beyond that. Much beyond that. We'll be back after the news with Larry Scott. And now
you've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Every now and then you think you know what's going on, right? You think you've got it all figured out, and then you discover that the things that you knew that you knew, you don't really know, and sometimes even the things that you know that you don't know, and you need to know what you don't know, and you know what you don't know, and what you don't know is what you need to know. Well, you know, to paraphrase Don Rumsfeld, and even sometimes everything you know is wrong.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync, and think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could it be? Could it be that the religion is the root of all terrorism? Vel Nerdist is with us. The book, The Pitfall of Truth, Holy War, Its Rationale and Folly. And the website, rootoutterrorism.com. Vel, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Vel, root out terrorism. What is the root of terrorism?
Well, in my view, the root of terrorism is, if you look at terrorism in a wider sense of violence that is inspired by various ideas, as we've seen throughout history, in my view, it is a totally unsubstantiatable view that we can know the truth, and as a result, whenever we come up with something nice and plausible and interesting, the authors of that idea advertise it as ultimate truth, and the truth is that strange magnetic thing about it, or electrifying thing about it, where we're willing to just go ahead and impose it.
Now, it sounds like what you're describing is either revealed religion, religion where somebody says, God came down and told me this.
That's that, right.
Gave me these tablets or gave me this insight or endowed me with the ability to speak on God's behalf, number one. Or number two, a philosophy, for example, well, you could, take your pick. I mean, communism, capitalism, objectivism, libertarianism, a philosophy that neoconservatism, a philosophy that says we know that this philosophy is going to produce a utopian world. We've got a superstructure of logic that supports that belief. We don't have any proof. We've never done it, but we're pretty sure it's right.
Well, that is perfectly what's happening. As soon as we manage to convince ourselves and our find a following to this idea, the following gets so electrified and the idea is so nice and beautiful, and all of a sudden everything will be wonderful, everyone will be living happily ever after, that just people go to extreme means to impose that, especially if that doctrine is couched in very convincing terminology. And, now we have people throughout the Middle East who are just convinced that it's enough to, strap explosives on themselves and press a button, and voila, you are in paradise and having good time with...
Well, on the other hand, you've got a guy in the White House who is convinced that if you can impose democracy on somebody at the barrel of a gun, that's going to cause them to suddenly love us and everything is going to be fine.
Well,
I mean, isn't that equally nutty?
It is not equally nutty, I would say. I would. What is nutty is the idea that democracy can be imposed just as democracy, just as a set of rules. That, I think, is nonsensical. In fact, on my website, rootoutterrorism.com, under my blog tab, there is a whole discussion of democracy that's called 2 plus 2, or Democracy in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Which, of which the first paragraph says, let's have a vote. Basically, how much is 2 plus 2? You cannot have a democracy until you have an underpinning understanding by the population that there are all sorts of various opinions and all sorts of various interests, and that they're not necessarily all wrong, all right, and that nobody has a monopoly on truth. And that is extremely important, and that is the foundation of democracy.
Well, this is the point that Plato made. This is the point that Jefferson made. This is the point that Alexis de Tocqueville made. This is the point that I'd say probably the last president to have made it was Dwight Eisenhower, is that in order to have a functional democracy, there are two absolute prerequisites. The first is a middle class, and the second is an educated populace with access to unbiased, a wide variety of unbiased information so that they can make reasonable decisions, since they're the ones running the show in a democracy. And increasingly that's not the case in the United States, and certainly that's not the case in many of the theocracies and the kingdoms of the Middle East.
Well, I would certainly add to that, to these two prerequisites, a prerequisite of understanding of the limitation of our own abilities. Because without that, you know, we, each of us suddenly, you know, jumps to our favorite conclusion, and all of a sudden we know the truth, and all of a sudden we just go ahead and kill and are killed for the sake of that particular truth with a capital T. It is very, very important to understand, first and foremost, that the most underpinning notion that we've got to have is that we cannot know certain things. It's not even that it is hard to know them. It is impossible to know them. So,
well, isn't that in and of itself an article of faith?
Well, that is a fact of reality. You know, if
well, wait a minute. That's what all the, you know, the revealed religions and the, we know how, you know, the revealed political system folks say. You know, no. This is a fact of reality that you know, that Muhammad was the prophet, or that you know,
and
fill in the
we
blank.
We cannot conclude that. The problem is that we cannot conclude. We can look at the moon. Let me just give you a simple example. We can look at the moon and say the moon is round, and this is a piece of reality.
But so it's not real. It's not round. It's irregular.
All right. Let me just rephrase it.
And the Earth isn't round. It's pear-shaped.
Well, let me give you any law of physics, the law of gravitation. Is that a piece of reality?
Well, it is at this moment, at this speed, but if you accelerate it to 99.9% of the speed of light, it's no longer a law.
Including the law that if you accelerate it to 99% of the speed of light, it is no longer a law. This whole, you know,
in other words, you're saying that there are some truths that are final that can be known. The 2 plus 2 does equal 4, period. End of discussion.
Well, that is one thing, but what I'm trying to say is that in all the religious theories, there is one hidden premise, and that is that we can know whether the prophet speaks the truth that he indeed spoke to God. And what the whole book is simply a refutation of that single hidden premise, where I say, no, this is simply impossible by the nature of things. Very much like it is impossible to go past speed of light, for example.
But then you get the response where people, Christians, for example, would quote or paraphrase Paul and say, you know, faith is belief in the things unseen.
And my answer to that, if you want it,
sure.
My answer to that is that we then no longer have faith, but what we do have, to use religious terminology, is idol worship. And it is very, very important to understand that not all religiosity is kind of uniform. There are two very, very different and fundamentally different modes of religiosity. One of them called faith or spirituality, and another one is called idol worship. People who do have faith or who are spiritual people just look around them, realize that there is a God, and the world kind of gives them awe. They just all of a sudden they really strike them as such an awesome, beautiful place.
Yeah, and you articulated that in the very last sentence of your book. You say we must learn to satisfy our thirst for faith with one single truth, that God indeed is.
But what Vel
Nerdes, the author of the Pitfall of Truth website, rootoutterrorism.com. What if gods are, not God is?
Well, it just doesn't really matter to me. Whatever general statement of faith you have,
mm-hmm.
unless you go beyond that and start going into particulars and say, oh, you know what? I know that Muhammad is the prophet.
Yeah. In other words, you're saying, you know, stick to the mystical end of things. When you turn it into a religion and a dogma and you absolutely believe in it and then you're willing to go out and die or kill for it, then it becomes a toxic thing. Is that the, summary of your point? We only have a few seconds left.
Right. What I'm saying is that certainty in religion is tantamount to idolatry. There is really no difference between them. A person who knows for certain that his religion is true is an idol worshiper. You know, Mark Twain has a wonderful, wonderful quotation. He said, "The easy confidence with which I know that another person's religion is false teaches me to suspect that my own is also." And that is a wonderful, wonderful maxim to take, I think.
Very interesting. Vel Nerdist, the book is The Pitfall of Truth, the website rootoutterrorism.com. It's a conversation that probably more of us should be having about, you know, the difference between religion and spirituality, and certainly I think among the fundamentalists in the world, something that a confrontation that should be happening. But good luck to both of us, eh?
Thanks
for being with us. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann radio program.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartmann.
Ghost of Columbus, false this world, God's still conquering America. The meek won't survive, inherit the earth, cause you're still conquering America.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour, speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone here in the People's Republic of Little Beirut, also known as Portland, Oregon. Tom Hartmann here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and streaming all around the planet. Larry Scott is with us, founder and editor of VAWatchdog.org.
Hello again, Tom.
Hello, Larry. How are you today?
Stainless steel micro. You don't have a solid gold one like somebody we know.
I wouldn't want one.
Okay.
It's stainless steel is just fine with me.
Okay. That works.
Yeah, it works. It works. And you've worked in radio. You know how good stainless steel is. So.
Yes.
Anyhow, VAWatchdog.org. I'm looking at your website here, and right up at the top, Representative Steve Buyer. Why does he pronounce it? Why not? Why doesn't he say buyer? It's B-U-Y-E-R.
Right.
Or would that sound like he's like, you know, available for sale for lobbyists or something?
I don't know why he pronounces it like that, but I have this firm rule in my life: never trust anyone who can't pronounce his own name.
Yeah, Steve Buyer, John Boner, Boehner, Bonner. These strange. Oh, well, anyway, okay, Steve Buyer ignores needs of home district veterans. What's this about?
Well, Representative Steve Buyer from Indiana is the chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, obviously a very powerful person on Capitol Hill. And in his district in Indiana, in the town of West Lafayette, there is a state-run veterans home. This is run by the state of Indiana, and you'll find these in states all over the country. There are some real problems at this home. It's under investigation right now. Veterans claim their personal monies are being misused. They claim they're being exposed to toxic substances. Family members have questioned the attempted suicide rate of the elderly veterans living in this home. Basically, we have a mess on our hands at this home.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Buyer was asked to take a look at this, and his quote was, "This is a state home. This is not a federal veterans home."
Now, this is the guy who is the number one Republican
in the House,
means in the House with regard to veterans issues. He's the chairman of the House VA committee.
Right. What we have here is absolute denial. This is incredible. This home, like all other state homes, receives a majority of its funding from the VA. It must meet VA standards of caring for these patients. All of these patients receive VA hospital care and specialized medical care. So, in theory, if Buyer wanted to walk away from this terrible situation, he could, which he did. However, we both know a man of this power and a man of this influence, not only on Capitol Hill, but in the state of Indiana, could get answers for these veterans and their families with a single phone call. All he would have to do is say, I will look into it. Let's find out, are monies being misused? Are there toxic waste problems? What about the attempted suicide rate? What's going on here? With a call to the director of that home or to the director of the state veterans, the Indiana State Veterans Affairs Department, he could have answers and put these veterans' worries to rest and, of course, the worries of their families.
Why would he choose not to? I mean, I don't get it. Is he such a Republican ideologue that he just, you know, really and truly believes government shouldn't be doing anything, including supporting vets, and so screw him?
Tom, I don't even have a theory on this one. This makes no sense. This is his home district. West Lafayette's right, Indiana's right in the middle of his home district. These are veterans. He is the veterans man on Capitol Hill. It's an election year. What do all of those flags say to you?
Well, they say to me that either this guy is totally incompetent, in which case you ask the question, why is he, you know, the senior Republican in the House with regard to Veterans Affairs or anything else for that matter, or he's such an ideologue that he's one of these, you know, Grover Norquist guys who thinks the government shouldn't do anything except, well, actually, even those guys say the government should field an army and veterans are part of the army, but I guess once you're out of the army, then good luck, Charlie.
Yeah, you know, you're just an old veteran and it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All of those things would signify to me that action should be taken and taken immediately. And even if I weren't a high-powered politician, I'd be doing something about this.
Yeah, yeah.
Why Booyer has walked away from veterans in his own district, in his own state, makes no sense.
Well, he certainly walked away from veterans nationwide, so I guess this at least he's being consistent. Now, you have we have just a minute left here.
Yeah.
Larry Scott, VAWatchdog.org. In Washington State and in Massachusetts, some problems here. Spokane, the VA cuts back their hours at their urgent care unit.
Spokane, Washington, what they have done, and this is a trend we're seeing nationwide, emergency rooms cutting back hours, urgent care units cutting back hours. Spokane says this is just a realignment of their resources up there. What this basically is, this is cutting veteran services.
They went from 24-hour service to 8.5 hours a day. That's,
right.
That's not a realignment.
That's not a realignment. What Spokane did is they put the burden back on the veterans, where veterans could walk in 24 hours a day and receive urgent care. Now that veteran has to get an ambulance, go to a local hospital. He has to pay for that ambulance and his local hospital fees. And hopefully, if he meets a whole series of requirements, he might get reimbursed by the VA. You're going to see it nationwide, Tom.
Amazing. Amazing. And then they just reject this thing for the single Boston Medical Center. You can read all about it over at VAWatchdog.org. Larry Scott, the founder and editor, VAWatchdog.org, the website. Larry, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much again, Tom.
And thank you for the good fight you're fighting on behalf of America's veterans.
We'll keep doing it.
You do it. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, there's a change taking place way on the mountains. The acid rain is falling on the leaves. And down in Brazil, the fires are burning still. How are we gonna breathe without them trees? So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only ours tomorrow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down.
Indeed. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Patty sends me a note. She says, you're not an East Coaster, so you wouldn't know this, but the former New Jersey governor, a Republican moderate, pronounces his name Kane, not Keen, the way it's spelled. Not logical, but there it is. Thank you, Patty. Thank you. And I have heard it pronounced Kane over and over and over again on news reports. But what can I say? You're right. It reads like it's Keen, but it is Kane. And thank you for correcting that. Here's this strange confluence of events. And I just want to lay this out very quickly, and then we're going to pick up your phone calls here. Number one, have you seen this ad on television? Where a group of Kurdish folks, the first time I saw this was, I think, last week. Louise and I were watching one of the CNN shows or one of the MSNBC, you know, one of the talk news shows, you know. And all of a sudden, here's this group of Iraqi Kurds There's a, you know, smiling faces, a young woman, you know, with a hood, you know, veil over her head, and there's another one without, and there's a little kid, a little boy, and a young girl, and an older guy, an older man, and a guy, you know, with his finger all purple, and they're all saying, you know, thank you, America. Thank you for liberating us from Saddam Hussein. Thank you, America. Just, and it all wraps up with a thank you from the Kurds of Iraq. And Louise's first response to it was like, whoa, what's that about? This has got to be a Republican stunt. And my thought was that, no, it's probably the Kurds being very wise. They want to have an independent Kurdistan, trying to influence American public opinion. My mentor, Gottfried Mueller, an old and dear friend, he's now in his early 90s, was the guy who actually designed the flag of independent Kurdistan, and a very, very good friend of mine was Horst von Heyer, a German. He worked for the same international relief agency that I've worked for 28 years, Kinder and Jugendhilfswerk Salem. He's worked for them a lot longer. He's just retired now, but he went in during when Bush Sr. had declared the no-fly zone, said he was going to kick a little Baghdad butt. And Saddam Hussein was sending guys in tanks, because he couldn't fly, up into Kurdistan and leveling villages. And Horst von Heyer went in there from Germany, snuck across the border, went in to try and bring in relief supplies. And he got shot. His car, 37 bullets in his car, three of them in him. And so Gerhard Liebfert from Salem headed down there and tried to get through. The Americans wouldn't let him in. It would have looked bad for George Bush Sr. And so he finally found a border guard that he could bribe, and he got in, and he was able to get Horst out, and he called me, and I flew over to Germany and met him at the hospital, and Horst is still limping. He's got a bullet in his leg from that experience. At least he survived it. But, our organization has had a long history of at least supporting the idea of an independent Kurdistan. And so I thought, you know, it's cool. Now I find out it's more than that. This is from the Interpress Service. The ad campaign, as well as a U.S. tour by Kurdish politician Beyan Sami Abdul Rahman, was put together by the California PR firm Russo Marsh and Rogers. They're the group that founded the Stop Michael Moore campaign to discredit the film Fahrenheit 9/11. And they helped create the group Move America Forward, which brought parents of dead U.S. soldiers to be counter-protesters at peace demonstrations. Not good. John Stauber, co-director of the Center for Media and Democracy, co-author of the book Weapons of Mass Deception, the Uses of Propaganda in Bush's Iraq War. He says he believes that the Kurdish government is using the U.S. government money to hire the Russo firm, which is then using the money to lobby for a continuation of the war. So, you know, who knows? Wouldn't be the first such time. In 91, Bush Sr. signed an executive order giving the CIA money to hire a PR firm, this was the Rendon Group, to run anti-Saddam Hussein propaganda programs inside the United States and around the world. And as part of that campaign, they created a group out of nothing. The PR firm created it, called the Iraqi National Congress, and put a guy named Ahmed Chalabi in charge of it. And according to Seymour Hersh, hundreds of millions of dollars of CIA money went to that front group. So who knows what's really going on here? I find it very strange. So anyhow, you got that. Then you have the 9/11 panel. Thomas Kane, the Republican governor of New Jersey and head of the 9/11 panel, saying that the Pentagon has been lying to them and the FAA has been lying to them. And we don't know, you know, why or what all's going on with this. We've got the Bush administration circulating draft legislation that would essentially set aside the entire Constitution, the entire Bill of Rights in the Constitution, so that you or I, any of us, could be arrested, held without charges. We could face a trial before a military tribunal called a commission that could hear evidence that was hearsay, that was obtained under torture. We would not have the right, not only to not have the right to face our accusers, we would not even have the right to be present at the trial. We would not have the right to make bail. We would not have the right to be represented by a lawyer of our choice. The military lawyer assigned to us wouldn't have the right to see the evidence the other side holds. and the Secretary of Defense would be in charge of all this, and he could make up laws. Well, to quote the New York Times or the Washington Post, he could add crimes at will to those under the military court's jurisdiction. Just declare things illegal and throw us in jail for it. As the Washington Post said, defendants would lack rights to confront accusers, exclude hearsay accusations, or bar evidence obtained through rough or coercive interrogations. They would not be guaranteed a public or speedy trial and would lack the right to choose their military counsel, who in turn would not be guaranteed equal access to evidence held by prosecutors. Detainees would also not be guaranteed the right to be present at their own trials. And this could be me and you. To secure a death penalty, I'm quoting from the Washington Post here, to secure a death penalty under the draft legislation, at least 5 jurors must agree. Now, right now, 12, you know, you get a jury, it's 12 people, all 12 have to agree. But they're saying, well, if you get 5 of the 12 to agree, then you can have a death penalty. I mean, this is amazing. They say, unlike the international war crime tribunals for Rwanda and the former Yugoslavia, the commissions could rely on hearsay as a basis for conviction. You can get the death penalty based on hearsay obtained from torture. These people, I'm telling you, whoever is circulating this, whoever is making these kind of proposals, this is not only anti-American, this is traitorous, this is treasonous, this is an absolute violation of the principles on which this country was founded and that Americans believe in. Democratic, Republican, you know, green, libertarian, I don't care what you call yourself, all of us should be standing up and saying, wait a minute. The Constitution of the United States that Americans for 230 years have fought and died for is worth defending, not destroying with this kind of legislation. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Dave in Los Angeles. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to mention to you, one of the more fascinating commercials I've just seen recently on Iraq is the Kurds have on CNBC a commercial running called The Other Iraq and a complimentary website, theotheriraq.com. And they're encouraging financial investment. But it's a fascinating commercial in that they're really distancing themselves from the mess that's going on down below them.
Yeah, well, and I think that's very wise of them. And that's where I'm not sure if this is part of some kind of massive disinformation campaign on the part of the Bushies to keep the war going, or if it's the Kurds getting their act together. If it's the latter, I think it's kind of cool. But I just don't know right at this point.
I agree.
Dave, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. Ed in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Yeah, in the first hour you were talking to David Tebow, who's a supporter of the Iraqi war. And here's something for him to consider, and the Bush administration also. The big beneficiary of this war will be Iran, because Iran is controlled by Shiites.
Yeah, not will be, already is.
Right, and Iraq, which was under Sunni control, is now under Shiite control.
Yep.
And so a potential enemy is now a sure ally.
And then you've got the same thing now going on, you know, Lebanon going down in flames, and it's gonna increase the power of Hezbollah, which is also a Shiite group. And the,
right.
And the Shiite crescent that everybody had been, you know, that we installed Saddam in the first place to prevent, is coming into being. Ed, thanks for the call and for pointing that out. Steve in Atlanta. Hey, Steve, we have less than a minute before we've got to take a break. What's up?
Oh, no problem. You had a caller one time that was, you know, asking you, don't you give Bush some credit for no terrorist attacks since 9/11? And here's my response to that. Here's my frame on that. What's the difference? 2,500 Americans are still killed because of his actions in Iraq.
And another 30,000 wounded for life. People
I mean,
missing arms, legs, eyes.
Parents are still missing children. Children are still missing parents.
Yeah. Good point, Steve. I wish I'd thought of it when I was arguing with David.
Not to mention the cost.
Yeah, not to mention the cost. The hundreds of billions of dollars which could have paid for scholarships for, you know, every American who wants to go to college. It could have paid for a national health care system. Could have paid to rebuild the infrastructure of this country that's crumbling. Instead, they want to privatize it and sell it off to countries so all our toll roads, become toll roads owned by people in Spain. It's nuts.
And Steve, making recruiting terrorists easier.
You bet. Steve, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it, and thanks for your patience in hanging on there. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, Barry, what's the mercy? And always take me there, the place I love. People around every corner seem to smile and say, we don't care what your name is, boy, we'll never turn you away.
And welcome back. 9.5 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman, or before the hour, rather. Excuse me, Tom Hartman here with you. You know, I just, a couple of points here that I want to make that I think are just absolutely critical before we just wrap the show up here with a few more phone calls. George W. Bush, first of all, talking about, you know, what's great about America.
We're a country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
Now, he says that's one of the great things about America. I would say, I'm sorry, George, that's one of the great things about all human beings all over the world. And when we start thinking that we're the only ones who cry when we see a child blown up, then we've got a real problem if you want to do anything called international diplomacy. But then it goes, it gets even weirder. Then George says, well, the war in Iraq is going well because they're killing Iraqis.
You know, they're obviously killing Americans, but they're killing a lot more Iraqis.
They're killing a lot more Iraqis, which takes us back to his original point that America is noble because when we see a child, we cry. Well, apparently in George's world, Iraqis don't cry. And finally, you hear Bush over and over and over again say that he's protecting America. My job is to protect America. My job is to make decisions. Here's Bush's job from his oath of office.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute the Constitution of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
And the Constitution of the United States, the Fourth Amendment says, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury in the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. That's the Sixth Amendment. That's something that Bush is saying, no, let's do away with that. Let's do away with that. We don't need that thing. The Seventh Amendment. In suits of common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined by any court in the United States other than according to the rules of common law. The Eighth Amendment, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishment. The Fifth Amendment, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentation or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be put twice in jeopardy of limb or life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Bush saying, nah, we don't need any of that stuff. We don't need any of that stuff. It's amazing. Jeff in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
Tom, I just wanted to follow up on what you were saying about this. This is about the worst thing that could happen to any activist in America right now. And as one, I'm going to use everything I have to make sure this doesn't happen. I've called both my senators and my member of Congress, and I'm going to use
Good
my blog to spread the word about, because they're all at home, so I'm going to put local numbers for our representatives in the state of Washington, and I would encourage every blogger in America to do the same.
Yeah, and when you call Washington, D.C., and you call the office there, you'll get a staffer, and they actually take your comments and things. You may also want to ask for the local numbers and call the local offices as well. And
absolutely.
Just say,
I've had a lot more success with the local offices,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, there you go. But the national number is 1-888-355-3588, toll-free across the country. Jeff, thank you. And good on you for being an activist. Harry in Seattle. Hey, Harry.
Oh, my. Hi, how are you, Tom?
Good.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to say, if we don't wake up and take back the Congress and the Senate, we're going to end up just like Germany.
We won't have elections.
Or
probably a better metaphor would be Mussolini's Italy, because you say Germany and people immediately think Holocaust. The same thing, though, you know, in terms of a fascist state, Franco's Italy, Pinochet's Chile, Mussolini's Italy. Yeah, absolutely. Harry, good point. Eric in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Eric, what's up? We have 1 minute.
Hey, Tom, privileged to talk to you.
Thank you for calling.
The point I wanted to make is that I'm glad you actually played that clip of Bush talking about when Americans see, you know, children being blown up and how we feel about it. Well, the point I want to make is we are not seeing that. And, you know, 100 years ago or 140 plus years ago or whatever it was, Matthew Brady did that expose on the Civil War dead and the dead at Gettysburg.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just photojournalism at its in its rawest and purest form. And I think Americans are just so insulated from the real sight and the graphic visualization.
I absolutely agree with you, Eric. We're missing so much of it. And by the way, in that clip, you heard Bush take his oath of office. He pledged to uphold the Constitution, not to protect us, to protect the Constitution. Craig in Seattle, we've got about 10 seconds. You're the last voice for the day. What's up?
Okay, Tom, last night I got to watch the 9/11 symposium, and we have to remember that everything that's happening in this country is based on the 9/11. And the only truth is we don't know the truth. And until we start really finding out about that and pressing for an impeachment of the people who caused these things, we're going to be in trouble.
Well said, Craig. Thank you very much. I missed that special last night. I'm hoping somebody recorded it that I can see the thing. I was flying back from Seattle, and anyhow, don't need to be making excuses, but understand it was a great program. Tomorrow, hurricane season. Conservative Peter Leeson and I are taking opposite positions on what should be done about FEMA. Amazing. And don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.